Let's start out with a little prayer and meditation. There was an interesting article in this morning's. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you please? Yeah, I see. It's an interesting article in this morning's paper on meditation. So it's not just for monks. Yeah, that's true. So we start with a few deep breaths and just sort of relax in place. Let go of any baggage that's tagging along with us this morning. Turn our thoughts inward to the One, our Source, our Beloved, with whom we're one. This morning we're listening. We're improving our listening skills and defining what it means to listen from the heart. Together we listen. We're grateful for what we're learning. As we release we open our hearts to the good that's ours today. So it is. So I was thinking on the way yesterday and a couple of times during the week. You'll see what I was thinking here in just a minute. I could look at it as being at a slight disadvantage because I'm talking about listening from the heart. My wife is here. Who knows all? I think of myself as a good listener. Several years ago, I had a course at UUCR on conflict resolution, and a big block of the course was listening skills. And I thought these little lists in here, they're much longer than they are in the little unit that we're doing today. I remembered some of those times in our little practicing sessions of listening, which we're going to do in the second part of this. They're illuminating. But I do think of myself as a good listener. But I will have to admit that there are some ifs associated with my listening skills. Like if we had some ham, we'd have some ham and eggs. If we had some eggs, several things have to be present before it can happen, you know. So sometimes, when possibly someone might expect you to be listening, You hear what they're saying, but you know that if you listen seriously, it's going to incur obligation. So you don't listen carefully. Mm-hmm. You don't want to pick up whatever involvement is involved. And well, that's not saying you have bad listening skills. That's saying you're exercising a choice, a conscious choice. To be a good listener does mean sometimes that you got to be able to turn it on and off. If you listen from the heart of everything that's going on around you, you're going to need some bandages before too long. But, you know, sometimes, it happens. And so there's something that's said in the course of a conversation. And so this is the result here, you know, and this is the answer right here. Have you ever seen this Prairie Logic book? It says, this is Grace and this is me. And Grace is saying, if you don't agree with me, it means you haven't been listening. this is her book, by the way. It's got this little Furry Logic book. It's really cute. If you've never seen it, you're welcome to take a look at it. Sometimes it means you have been listening and you're not saying anything because nothing you could say right now is going to help the situation. So, and sometimes you're just exercising judgment things. But a lot of the times, you know, I can just be guilty of, you know, focus somewhere else. I'm and somebody's talking to me. I'm not even aware of it. I share an office with a lady that I've shared the office with her now for pretty close to 6 years. And, you know, people come in and visit her or come in and visit me. We rarely pay any attention to what's going on. We're both working over in our opposite corners. And, you know, there may be a little chatter going on there. I don't hear it. I mean, I practice, as well as to practice listening, I practice not listening. Mm-hmm. There are two similar skills. One, you turn a whole lot of switches on. The other one, you turn a lot of switches off. But there are, when I took this little course, I felt like I was discovering in the course of it that as a general rule, I was a fairly good listener. Simply because I like people. And when someone's talking to me, I try to listen to what they're saying. If I have given them my attention. But only if I have given them my attention. If someone is talking to me over here, and I'm not aware of it, and haven't given them and I may become remotely aware of it, and for whatever reasons, decide not to give them my attention. Now, you can make a judgment call on whether or not that's a good or bad thing. Some people, if you give them your attention every time you want it, you'd never be able to give anybody else your attention. But, I mean, I'm thinking there on the job kind of things. And so those are judgment calls that, I mean, we make judgment calls. Mm-hmm. I do make judgment calls. And I don't mean I'm judging morality here or anything like that. But, you know, it's just you have to determine sometimes whether something is right or wrong for you, or whether you're kind of willing to give your time for this or give your time for that. So that for me is the hard part of listening, and it's not even the part we're going to talk about today. I mean, we're going to be focused more on the skills of what these things are. What does it mean when you're listening from the heart? And I think I've been there to a level that has often been painful. Mm-hmm. Because part of the skills that come from listening to heart is sometimes you have to detach yourself just a little bit, not to stop listening, but to not be overcome by empathy. And you can be. You can be listening and you can allow your mind to flow so into theirs, into what they're saying, that you lose any sort of objectivity. And then several other things that are important in listening for the heart get obviated. I mean, you can't do the rest of them, for this one. So we're talking about striking balances here when you're listening from the heart, being able to truly listen, but being able to manage the detachment to the level that you can listen without being so pulled into it that you're not any good. And also, another difficulty for me sometimes when I'm listening from the heart is to resist a solution that I know is already there. I mean, mm-hmm. been there, done that, this is what you need to do. But you know, what works for you doesn't always work for somebody else. And so I've gotten over the years, I think, fairly good at not doing that unless it's one of my kids. And I don't do it. I think both of them would tell you now I'm not as inclined to do it as I once was. You know, when they were growing up, I would just listen with all kinds of empathy and then proceed to say, well, you can't do that. That's not what they were looking for. So, I don't know. It's part of being a parent sometimes is telling your kids they can't do something. Necessary. It's like, or tell them that they have to do something interesting. Another paper article about kids who, one of the reasons you make your kids do tasks, for example, at home, you make them do part of the cleanup, you make them help clean. You make them do some grubby little details at home. It has nothing to do with an earning an allowance. I mean, at least it never did with me.
Yeah.
They're going to get their allowance, but not. It has not. That's not what it's all about. The point is, those are life skills. If they don't learn them while they're at home, when they move off, And I've seen this over and over again. The house is going to look like crap all the time. They're not going to have learned housekeeping skills. They're not going to learn their personal responsibility for them. So when you listen to your child whining about why they shouldn't have to do something, you've listened to them, but you've made a conscious decision that it doesn't matter how they feel about it. They've got to learn this, so they're going to do it. You follow them. Sometimes mm-hmm. the listening brings about hard decision making. It depends on the relationship. However, with most people, when you're talking to a friend, you're talking to a cohort, they're not looking for you to tell them what to do like you told your kid, which is sometimes what I want to do. I want to say, just don't do that. You know, don't move in with him.
Yeah,
move out now. You can't do that. It doesn't usually work, does it? But you sure, you know, sure feel like it sometimes. Especially if you've had this, if you've had the same conversation, they come to you and it's the same thing over and over again, then it gets more difficult to listen to this story after you've heard it 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 times. The same sad story. When you're not really allowed to give them any advice. So then you start looking for ways in the course of being a good listener to drop a few hints. Like, well, I've got a good book you should read. Sometimes that helps, you know. You might want to read. You might want to read. So it's hard to draw lines. It's hard sometimes to practice the skills of being a good listener because you get drawn into, you don't always get to offer your advice to fix the situation. It's unwanted. And then sometimes you don't want to listen because you don't want to have to respond. There's a response expected. So there are all kinds of things that combat being a good listener, and it causes a lot of people to develop an aloofness, to walk away from, to know that listening only involves them. And a lot of us do that. I've seen a period of my life when I did that. I didn't listen a whole lot, wasn't involved with a whole lot because I couldn't handle the pain that came with it. And couldn't handle the my inability to do anything about it when I heard it. So, you know, basically at that point in my life, I had to walk into a new life somewhere because all those things I was hearing around me, this just wasn't a place where I wanted to live. So sometimes you may be driven to a point of not being a good listener, and then it's time to say, why am I not listening? What is it here? Do I not have control of my own life? And you may make some rather startling discoveries with that kind of examination. But I kind of like, cause of course, Stephen Covey. He's hard to beat with a lot of his things that he says. But he said it doesn't take anywhere near as much time. Listening, empathetic listening takes time. It does. But it doesn't take anywhere near as much time as it takes to back up and correct the misunderstandings that occurred because you weren't listening to start with. I mean, that's, you know, it's you'd think that'd be common sense, but it's really not all that common. The introduction, I'm sure everybody's read it several times. Because if you're like me, you've read it if you're going to be talking. But some of the things we'll just kind of look at, but before we get into our exercise, that are perfectly good things to think about before we enter our next little meditative session. When we hear someone deeply, we hear the words, the thoughts, the feelings, the explicit meaning, and the unstated implicit meaning. And that's a pretty good definition of what listening from the heart is. You know, you're looking at the person, you're focused on what they're saying, you're picking up on their body language. And listen, you could spend several weeks session of learning to interpret body language, but you know, and then you'd still make errors trying to do it academically. So my opinion on trying to memorize all this body language stuff is scrap that and just let your intuition weigh the body language. You can tell if someone's fidgeting or if their eyes are biking. You can feel that there is something missing from what they're saying, likely truth, you know, and some of those eye movements and certain kinds of fidgeties and strumming while they're talking to you, you know, you learn in your body language class that these indicate the possibility of at least you may not be getting the whole truth, or you may be getting especially with eye movements and blinkings, and you may be getting something that's not true, or they're holding back or something like that. But you know what? You don't need to know that to see that. And it could be wrong with a given person. I mean, you have to put it with several other things. So you get so darn many things to measure on this body language that by the time you get through looking at all their movies and stuff like that, you haven't heard a word they said. So you don't know what it was they said wasn't true. You just know they just told you a lie, or they just told you something that was without a doubt the truth, but you didn't hear it because you're too busy trying to weigh all these movements or stuff like that. But, you know, you can learn to develop a feeling with someone, and I find trust in the gut is a pretty good way to go. When you're really listening and you're listening with your heart and you're trying to hear what this person is saying, you can get the implicit. You can get it. They call it reading between the lines, but sometimes reading between the lines is putting stuff between the lines. So you have to be careful there too. It's trying to like read body language, because sometimes you put things between the line instead of feel that which is between the lines. You know, someone tells you that, you know, a certain thing is, you know, bothering them. You know, they may be trying to tell you that you're the one who's doing that thing. So you need, you know, your mind needs to be receptive to feel that kind of thing, that they're actually telling you that they have a problem with you, not a problem with somebody else. And, you know, I've seen that very kind of thing happen where it just got totally missed, and somebody says, well, I tried to tell them, but they don't seem to understand. I had a fellow once, it's been a number of years ago, who says, well, what would you do if somebody did pa-da-pa-da-da-da-da-da? You know, this litany of not very nice sounding things. And I says, well, I'd probably be a little upset with them. I'd probably tell them it really bothered me. And he says, well, that's what you did to me. I said, I did, huh? I mean, that was tricky, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't have listened to him. I mean, I didn't see myself in it when he was saying that. I didn't see me at all. But he said, you did it. And even after he said, you did it, I had to think a minute. Well, where did I do this? And I says, and I realized, well, I did, didn't I? Dang, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not what I meant at all. I didn't mean to do that to you. Mm-hmm. But I had, and it wasn't very nice. Mm-hmm. And so he used a little trick on me, and I fell into the listening from the heart. Zap, I got it. You did it to me. But he had to say, you did it to me. You mm-hmm. did that to me. And I had to think about it and realize I had, but not from his first explanation of it. So maybe I wasn't listening from the heart that much at the time. Never did like that guy anyway. Do you think that had anything to do with it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Listening with an open heart means that we leave behind our hidden agendas, our judgments, and our mind chatter. I mean, these little short sentences in here in the course that we have would be several pages long about what all this means, but there's plenty of, you know, when you're listening, if you're listening and evaluating in the process, and this is kind of, sometimes you have to do it at work. Mm-hmm. At work, sometimes you do have to listen and you have to judge, because it's your job to determine whether something is valuable, right, wrong, correct, proper, the course to follow. And our hearts sometimes can say, oh, you don't want to have to answer this. You don't want to have to make this decision. But it's what you get paid to do. So it's really important that you're listening and that you're making the judgment that you know in your heart are right. But making judgments on your friend's decision to cohabitate or not cohabitate, now that's a whole different story. It's a different thing. Or even what your adult kids may want to do is a whole different story. But listening with a heart and dropping the judgments on it can be a very difficult thing to do when you know if you were in this situation, you know exactly what you would do. You have the sense of what you feel is right and wrong for you. So listening sometimes to a friend whose approach to life is really different from yours can be difficult, but it's a skill that you really can learn to do. You can learn to drop that sort of stuff. And as you practice more the principles that we study here, it gets easier and easier to do that, because you really get more distance from the old idea of the boogeyman, you know, I remember one of the things that led me away from a fundamentalist kind of religion was this very thing of judgment and right or wrong. And I was telling Grace yesterday about a biology teacher that I had in high school that I really got a lot from, because it was then, when I was in 10th grade in high school, that I was really involved in the fundamentalist faith. And Mr. Love would quite frequently throw little bombs at my philosophical thought process. He was a graduate of PC, and I think he would consider himself Christian, but he did have a lot of metaphysical thought processes, and also very liberal, and of course no belief in some of the more fundamentalist things like hell and the devil and those kinds of things. And so he'd throw things at me. I mean, he suggested that, you know, that I expand my reading. And I ultimately did. And the impact of that reading, and one of the books that I read was Joseph Fletcher's Situation Ethics. Well, I read it, immediately rejected it completely. This can't be, there can be no truth in this at all. This is, you know, this is just contrary to the Bible. Actually, turns out it's really not, but it can be interpreted that way, you know. And Fletcher's not saying that there's no such thing as right or wrong, and just saying that it's not as absolute as people think it is, you know, and making judgments of right or wrong. So tough thing when you have a mindset of what you think is right or wrong, not to impose that on someone else. But listening from the heart, that's an important attribute. And enough said on that. I could spin on that one for a long time, because it is really important. And being able to listen is not to condemn somebody while they're talking to you. Yeah, you know, this is just one of those little subtle things related to it. You know, when you're listening from the heart, you can hear the universal, and you intuit whether they're fearful or angry or you know where they really meant it when they say, "Oh, everything's okay." But you can just hear, you say, "How you doing?" and they say, "Yeah, okay." You know, I'm not sure if I came across as a bad okay then, but you can really hear it in their voice when they're saying everything's okay. And what you feel, if you're listening, really listening to their response, what you feel is you feel this wash of something ain't right. You know, so you can, sometimes it's a little more subtle, sometimes it bowls you over, but you can do it. And I like this. I'm read the whole sentence. Since we're complex beings, our emotions, our judgments, our beliefs, and values will come through in our communication with others, in our words, but also in our voice tone and inflection, in our body language, and inner energy. Well, one of the problems I get in trouble with my wife and kids a lot of times is not just that I don't appear to be listening to them. Now, can I say something in my defense on that? Because, you know, I don't hear well. I wear hearing aids in both ears. Well, I'm supposed to. I have two hearing aids. I have two hearing aids. I have one for each ear, but they're very old now, and they're staticky. And I haven't worn them for 10 years, I guess. So I really don't hear a lot of times if I got my back turned to you or something like that. So I get fussed at for not wearing my hearing aids. Mm-hmm. That fuss has been running for 10 years now since I quit wearing the hearing aids, because they just drove me crazy with all that whistling and howling and static. I need to get some new ones, I suppose. They have new ones now that are real small, so I don't hear well. Last week, a lady in our office came in, and what she wanted to talk about was really important. So important that she had to open the door. All I could see was her lips moving. I couldn't hear a thing she said. Mm-hmm. Nothing. I mean, and so I got real close to her, and I said, "I didn't hear a thing you said. I didn't hear a thing you said," I whispered back to her. And so she whispered it all again, louder. And I could hear this. But there were still no words in there. So I was starting to pick the words up, though, because she was enunciating somewhat as she was whispering. So I says, we're going to have to raise it up just an eighth of an octave. So finally I got at least half between reading her lips and I got it. It was extraordinarily unimportant. But not to her. Not to her. But I listen. Whew. Sometimes it's not. So we're going to do a little exercise in the second half of the thing where we practice some of these things. So we've got to at least look at them a little bit. We've already talked enough, I think, about listening with your intuition, with your eyes, and so forth. But some of the skills that it talks about required when we're listening, you know, like maintaining eye contact. Now, that's another one that you got to be careful with that. You know, maintaining eye contact doesn't mean you sit there and you got to force somebody to look. Okay, let's be careful here. You got to be looking at people, and when they're looking at you, you know, you. Sometimes people want to talk to you, and when they're upset, they don't want to look you in the eye. So your impulse is to get them to look you in the eye, so you can feel like you're telling the truth. Well, no, wait just a minute. You know, that's part of you letting your intuition determine whether or not they're looking away because they're not telling the truth. Not forcing them to look. You can't, you know, you say, okay, you're going to talk to me, you got to look me in the eye. Well, okay, let's not get too carried away here. The important thing is the eye should be focused on the individual. And looking at them, you know, when eyes turn to meet each other, truth touches. And you can feel it. But, you know, sometimes there's intensity in that eye contact that can pull you in directions sometimes you don't really need to go at the moment. You can listen better if there is some looking. In some cultures, eye contact is not desirable. I mean, Asian cultures are particularly aware of this. There is some aversion of the eyes even when absolute truth is being spoken. So, you know, you just have to be conscious of that. These are not rules. They're skills. And eye contact is an important one. It's not a rule. And, of course, we already talked a little bit about body awareness and attention. You know, acknowledgement of the speaker through immediate feedback, indicating understanding through a nod, a yes or a no. Summing up what's being said. You know, those are just things that you can practice. They're things that help keep you, you know. I get in trouble sometimes because, and this is kind of, my wife being from California thinks this is a Southern attribute, you know. We talk slow, we think slow. Well, it just looks that way. That's not what's really happening. Our mind's going a million miles an hour so fast that we can't pull the words out of the stream. But she'll say something, and I really should say yes or no. And it's just that I feel like I'm in such... Well, this is really a bag of it right here. I feel like I'm in such communication with her that I don't even need to respond. See, you're never in that kind of communication, no matter whether you're feeling it or not. You need to occasionally, in the course of listening, nod yes and no, and definitely if a yes or no is called for, you need to give it. And not always much else. And sometimes when the person gets through talking, you know, sometimes a little silence or breaks in it are okay. It's all right. But to keep things up in your own mind when you're listening, sometimes it is good to make a little summary. So, and you can, you only want to make a summary if you've clearly been given a time to talk, not to take away the, you know, from the person who's talking to interrupt them to summarize. Hold it now. Let me just go back and wrap up or summarize. And they don't want to hear that. They're talking. You know, hold on to it. There will come a break, and then you can say, so, you were told to, you know, walk waist deep in the mud, then bend down and pick up the widget, and which meant putting your head all the way under the mud. God, that really sucks. You know, so you can summarize things, and usually they won't be that pleasant, but... oh, yeah, here's the thing wife said. Don't interrupt summarizes. Allow the speaker to complete his thoughts without interruption. That's really not that hard to do with a little practice. And this is goes back to the old judgment thing, being open and receptive to his or her thoughts, you know, even if you disagree with them. I mean, I'd say that, not all of my friends at work are considerably further to the right than I am politically. You know, it's in, this is the middle, and they're over here, and I'm over there somewhere, you know, so, and so sometimes when we have these little political discussions, they get a little animated at times, and we disagree, but it's okay. It's okay. I mean, the only place where I would not participate in a discussion is someone refused to allow us to disagree, and so those kind of discussions you just kind of avoid because somebody is not who is trying to force a belief on you or something like that. There's no requirement to listen from the heart to anything they have to say. It's just not, because they're not talking to you about their problem. They're trying to make their problem yours. And, well, that's not right. I'm saying that right. You know what I mean? When somebody's trying to pull you over to a thought process, to having the animated, lively conversations with somebody you totally disagree with is a healthy thing to do. So long as you both get to talk and you allow them to talk, they allow you to talk, sometimes you both evolve from it. And you can see, just like my Marine buddy, Mike Leonard, commander of the West Coast, he says, every once in a while I have to call Phil to see what the other side is thinking. He listens, though, very intently. And he's evolved over the years, mainly because his wife is about 80% hippie. But, she's a jewel. Both his sons graduated from MIT now, and one of them's at Harvard working on his PhD. It's an interesting family. The kids are mixed between his wife's extreme liberalism and he's not so extreme to the right anymore, and nor is his wife so extreme to the left. It's kind of interesting. He has a social awareness now that has evolved in him, and it's warming to hear his involvement in him. You evolve, you grow by allowing yourself to have those and listen to somebody, whether you agree with them or not. So, what time is it?
10:50.
So we're getting close to break time here. Mm-hmm. So let's just take the last few minutes and we come back and we'll start the exercise on the next half here. The last week we talked about assertive speaking, I guess. Wasn't that the way it's called? Speaking authentically from the heart. Now we're listening from the heart. So... what we'll take here now, if anybody wants to share anything, because the homework that you went away with was to monitor your own ability to do speaking authentically, authentically from the heart. Anybody have anything you want to share on any thoughts that you had on that or noticed about your own life? Ah, how am I surprised?
Thank you, Phil. Nice job. Always appreciate you.